epiphanies often come from some of the more unlikely places. I mean, if you were staring right at it, would you actually see it? For me, this past week, it was from your defending champion, Golden State Warriors. No kidding, right? You may have heard that this past week, Stephen Curry, in addition to all the many honors of this past year, was named one of the world's 100 most influential people by Time Magazine. Now, honestly, I'm not quite sure how I feel about that. And yet, if a professional athlete is going to wield influence in this country, let alone in this world, my sense is that Steph Curry is probably as good a person to hold it as you might have. But in regards to our sacred text for this morning, it was actually Draymond Green's response to Curry's honor that caught my attention. In case you missed it, here's what Steph Curry's teammate Draymond Green said about this award. He said, "I think that's pretty dope. I think he uses his platform well. He uses it the right way. Sometimes you can be in that position and not necessarily use it the right way. He really stays true to himself and glorifies the things he believes in." It's that last part. He glorifies the things he believes in. And it makes me wonder if Draymond has spent some time with John's Gospel. Because, as we just heard, the writer of John's Gospel, well, they're really big on glory. They are so big on glory, in fact, that it can be a little bit dizzying to make your way through this very short passage. It's not quite clear who is glorifying whom, and more importantly, what it might mean to be glorified in this context. And so, this is where an excellent and compelling paraphrase of the Bible, The Message, can be of assistance. Here is Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of verse 31. "When Judas had left, Jesus said, 'Now the Son of Man is being seen for who he is, and God seen for who he is in him.'" The moment God is seen in him, God's glory will be on display. Again, the Son of Man is seen for who he is, and God seen for who he is in him. It's this seeing and being seen that catches my eye. And I really do think that it has caught Draymond Green's eye and Time Magazine's eye as well. And so what if we were to work with a definition of glorification that was something like this? That glorifying something is what we hold up, or what we honor, what we show the world around us. What our lives, in the broadest of brush to the most minute of detail, what they allow to be seen. So what do you glorify? From Steph Curry's personal gifts of time and presence to stop the spread of malaria, to his public and demonstrative love of his daughter Riley, his beliefs can be seen through his actions. They glorify what he knows to be true. And it's that same God being seen in us that connects the first part of this passage from John to that last part. So I'd like to read again from The Message, this time verses 34 and 35. "Let me give you a new command. Love one another. In the same way I love you, you love one another. This is how everyone will recognize that you are my disciples, when they see the love you have for each other. They will recognize when they see the love you have for each other." last couple of weeks, I have been in conversation with many people inside and outside of this parish about where we are as a nation, as a body politic. And even though my circles of relationships aren't as encompassing as I wish them to be, these disparate conversations have given me glimpses of the many forms of fear that are coursing through the currents of our country. In some of these conversations, it has become clear that some people are afraid, deeply afraid for our country, that it is irretrievably corrupt because Hillary Clinton has not yet been indicted. And in other conversations, I have talked with people who are afraid, deeply afraid for our country, that it is surely headed for anarchy because of the candidacy of Donald Trump. Here's the bizarre part. Until I put those two sentences together recently, I wouldn't have said that either of these people whom I know personally are extremists. They're just friends that are far, far apart. My guess is that I'm not alone here, that many of you have found yourselves in conversations like this and have found yourselves wondering what in the world these next 6 months might bring. Some people say that we haven't seen this level of polarization in this country since Reconstruction following our Civil War in the 1870s. Now, I wish that I could say that our cities by the bay were an exception to this polarized rule, but I think that you and I know that that's really not the case. And so here's what concerns me, friends. When fear settles into the bones, into the marrow of the body politic, as theologian Joseph Bessler has noted, it causes us to pull apart from one another and to ignore the common good. In short, if they're going to believe that, why should I care about that? It's why these words from Jesus this morning and why our actions in these next 6 months and the days that will follow this coming election, why they are so critical to us as Christians. Because when fear is rampant, when motives are questioned, when intentions are impugned, it is then that we are asked, even commanded, to have our lives glorify the Lord of love. That God, unrelenting passion and steadfast love, is to be seen in us, in and through a life that we give away, even to those who would dismiss us, or deny us, or defame us. Now, I realize that depending on the fervor or the rancor that continues to hold sway, that this actually might not be very popular. Indeed, this stance may not win many elections, let alone this election. But I truly believe that it is the only way forward for those of us who, through our lives, preach Christ crucified. And yes, I will admit, I want to fire back with the best of them. Wallowing in Schadenfreude this political season has become like a part-time job for me. And I've been good at it. I can tell you firsthand, it does not lead to life. For me, or for my brother or my sister, that I cannot understand. Now, I realize that this may not change the course of the 2016 election, but I have come to realize what I need to be doing. I will be seeking several people out that are far from my place on the political spectrum to listen deeply, to seek common ground, to learn what it is like to be them. Now, having attempted this recently at the Thanksgiving table, I know that this can be trying and it can be exhausting. But I actually believe that we are meant to engage someone that we couldn't disagree with more. And in so doing, remember that we are putting our beliefs on display. So I wonder who it might be for you. A neighbor? A classmate? A co-worker? A sibling? An in-law? It's always easy to choose an in-law. Who will it be? What will our words and our actions glorify? Regardless of a partisan affiliation, how will someone watching you know that you follow the Lord of love? In the end, I'd like to offer a story that I came across this past week from Isaac Dinesen's book, Out of Africa. A boy named Kitao arrived at Dinesen's door one day looking for work as a domestic servant. She hired him, and he worked for her and did well, but after 3 months came to pass, she was taken by surprise when he approached her to resign. But in his resignation, he asked for a letter of recommendation so that he could go and work for Sheikh Ali bin Salim, a Muslim who lived in a nearby town. And when Dinesen, she tried to offer Kitao more money, he politely refused. Money was not what prompted him to seek employment in her home. You see, Kitao had decided that he was either going to become a Christian or a Muslim. And the reason why he had become a servant in her home was to be able to see up close how a Christian lived. He now wanted to go and work in Sheikh Ali's home and see what it was like to live as a Muslim. Funny how, in telling the story, the author wished that Kitao had told her of this at the start.